This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Dash and Lily, Episode 7, the Christmas episode. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for One Dry Kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms. Today we are going over Dash and Lily, Episode 7, Christmas. And I am here with my lovely co-host, who there's no one I would prefer to spend Christmas with than Miss Tamara Cosio.
Aw, thanks. And I am here with the candy to my cane, Corinne Edding.
Peppermint, right?
No, we had this argument earlier. I can't believe she said that peppermint candy canes are her favorite.
They're the best.
We just bought a big old box of Life Saver flavored ones, which are far superior.
They're not.
They are.
And Tam has this theory that if they're not my favorite, therefore I don't like them, which that would lead me to not like 99% of things in the universe.
That sounds about right.
Sure.
You're finicky, just like Dash.
I am kind of like Dash in a lot of ways. I'm just going to admit this right here and right now. If Dash and Lily had a baby, it'd be me.
I could totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you do have all of the Christmas cheer of Lily.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, we had a little Christmas adventure. Merry Christmas Eve if you're listening to this on the day we release it.
Yay!
We went down a little nostalgic path down memory lane to Christmas in the Park.
Yes.
In San Jose, which is something I used to do quite frequently with my mom. And aww, we revisited it yesterday. And it was something.
It has all the same animatronic characters from when we were kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Christmas in the Park is in a park. It's decked out in all kinds of Christmas trees, which I think you could probably purchase. And so people just like decorate the trees per their like company theme or their family theme or whatever. And then intermingled between the Christmas trees are these animatronics that used to really impress me when I was a kid. I was like, oh my God, they're moving. Look at the elves are climbing up the ladder to put the presents on the shelves. And it was so charming. And when we went yesterday, I'm like, those are the same fucking animatronics.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to take all of them to the dry cleaner because they look like they've been sitting there since the 80s.
Yeah, they need a good steam cleaning for sure.
Yeah. I just like want to take over Christmas in the Park and revamp it. I really do.
I gotta say, the one that we went to this year was the least sad Christmas in the Park that I've ever been to.
It made me sad because I'm like, those animatronics were my favorite part. Now I'm like, it's just ho, 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 ho. They have like the halting like movements and they're dirty.
They always have the halting movements.
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. They were magical.
Uh-huh. Sure.
To my 9-year-old eyes. But that was like all of the Chuck E. Cheese days when, you know, like the animatronics at Chuck E. Cheese were like the height of technology.
And they also had halting movements as well.
And they were a little more scary than the Christmas in the Park animatronics. Yes. They were huge.
They were huge and had big soulless eyes.
Yeah. I remember watching a horror movie. Oh, God. Five Nights at Freddy's. About animatronics that come to life in a pizza parlor and wreak havoc. And it was a little triggering. I was like, ah, too close to home. Oh my God.
I was wondering if it was the Freddy's one.
Yeah. I don't want that visual in my head anymore.
We Christmased up yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did we go to Christmas in the Park, which I thought it was really cool to see all the differently kind of decorated Christmas trees. There's a great picture that I took of Tam and us with an Oscar the Grouch Christmas tree.
That Oscar the Grouch Christmas tree was epic.
Yes.
Maybe we'll post it on our social media.
Yes, let's do it. And I thought it was really nice how they had like a section for family memorial Christmas trees too. And just like looking and seeing how different people were like honoring their families was, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, but there were like, there were a lot of really cool looking thematic trees, including a wicked one where there was the witch feet with the ruby slippers upside down on like top of the tree. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did we do that.
Oh, yes. We went to go see Red One.
And it was a bucket full of Christmas cheer. Thank you very much.
We also saw it at Eastridge, which was the mall I hung out quite frequently as a teenager. Oh my gosh. It was another walk down memory lane. And that mall is also super run down. And I was like, Jesus yeah. Christ. It's like San Jose aged with me and didn't get any facelifts or plastic surgery or anything done because it was just, it was sad. It was so sad.
You know what, though? I actually thought it looked really nice compared to previous times I've been there too. So it has had a facelift since. Mm-hmm. And then we took a wandering tour back through the longest way that we could have possibly gone to get to the movie theater.
Yeah.
I was following Tam. I was like, she knows where she's going.
Are you kidding me? You cannot blame that shit on me because they said, here's the movie theater right next to the bowling alley. And I'm like, I know where the bowling alley is. We walked to the bowling alley. It was not next to the bowling alley.
No, it was out of the store that we initially left where we smelled so many stinky candles. And I accidentally contaminated my hands with Bath and Body Works scents. So that when I was eating popcorn, it was like a cornucopia of smells.
You had twinkling twilight flavored popcorn.
Oh, man. And you had like sugar.
Champagne.
Yes.
I got the worst popcorn at this AMC. They had like specialty popcorn. And I was like, oh, I'll try some of that. And they gave it to me. And it was pink and green and tasted like it was crusted in sugar. Which first couple of kernels, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Oh, my God. I could feel that my soul leaving my body. There's so much sugar on this stuff. I didn't even finish it. That is the first time I didn't finish a small popcorn.
She tried like foisting it off on me. Here, you want some? No, you really want some? No, you want some more? I was like, I'll take a few. And then after that, I was like, I need to drink more water. And Tam didn't get anything to drink. And I was like, how's she doing it? How is she eating this popcorn?
It's probably why I got sort of faint halfway through the movie. I was getting a little sugar rush. Yeah, that was not good popcorn. So don't get the wonderful popcorn if you are at the AMC. I do not recommend it unless you really like sugar.
Mm. More sugar, please.
No, thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
And we also went down to downtown San Jose to go have some Super Taqueria Mexican food. And we were driving so around good. And I was like, oh, my God, I totally just had a flashback. My uncle used to live around here. I don't remember what street he lived on. I don't remember what his apartment looked like. I just remember he had a walnut tree in front of his apartment. And sometimes my dad would send me outside while he was watching the football game or something to go pick him some walnuts. And I was like thrilled at first because walnuts, yay. But then I opened up a couple of walnuts that had maggots in it and it totally ruined walnuts for me for a really long time. All that stuff came to me as we were driving down Second Street. Aww. It was very strange.
Childhood trauma and egging out our gentle listeners.
Yeah.
It's like combined in one beautiful cornucopia.
You want sugary popcorn? You want maggoty walnuts? We got everything here for you.
So I have a question, Tam.
Sure.
Since you are the person that I would like to spend Christmas with, what are you doing on Christmas?
Going to Fresno to spend it with my sister.
Oh. Yeah. I see how it is.
Yeah. I didn't get enough of her at Thanksgiving. So I'm going back for seconds.
Which is fair because we're spending a bit more time together than we usually do. So.
What? And also my niece might come by with her baby, hopefully, with her brand new baby. I was just born in November. I really am looking forward to see them and meet the baby if I can.
That is exciting.
I know.
I may show up and be like, where's Arlie? Where's Arlie? And Denise will be like, we didn't invite Corinne. I'm like, I'm invited by default.
Yeah. The invitation's unspoken. I don't know if you know that. We're family pretty much. So yeah. Door's always open for family, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing for Christmas, Corinne?
Thanks for asking, because Christmas is very important to me. Mm-hmm. And first step one is get a tree.
Okay, done. Check, check.
Decorate the tree.
Done. Check, check.
We got Chauncey the Christmas tree, and so that was step one. Step two, Christmas Eve, the one day that I refuse to work.
Ah.
I'll work on Christmas Day in the afternoon. I don't care. But Christmas Eve, uh-uh.
I would really hate to see the people that want to make chiropractic appointments on Christmas Day. I mean, I guess if they're, you know, if they practice another religion, it's fine. Sure. But yeah.
But culturally, Christmas is kind of all over the place in the United States, yeah, regardless. However, my parents are coming up from San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to work on a puzzle together, and it does not involve pooping puppies. Thank
oh, you,
you
guys
very
are
much.
All crazy. You're crazy.
We are going to have a lovely dinner together. There may be some present opening because, gentle listeners, my family opens presents on Christmas Eve. And then Christmas morning is for stockings.
Ah, they do it backwards. I see.
Mm-hmm. Because if you save it all for Christmas Day, then you just have like present overload. But if you do the presents the night before, then in the morning you have your lovely stockings. Yay. And then you don't have like so much Christmas to contend with. It's spread out. It's lovely.
And you get to play with all your toys.
Exactly. But before Christmas Day, my church has a service. I'm going to be singing in it. There's going to be Christmas carols. There's going to be all these candles lit. And the last one I sang it, my ghostly sister appeared upon to me.
Huh?
Yes. Yes.
Details, please.
So I sing with the choir. And so my sister was in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very important thing for her. So I sing in the choir. We were all up on like the chancel on the stage in front of the church. And then in front of the congregation. And I glance over and I swear I see Bridget.
No.
Like sitting in a chair with her like in choir land. And I'm like, I know I can't possibly be seeing Bridget. And that's fine. I like look away. I look back. She's gone. So before, when we opened the service, we all had these electric candles and we were walking down the sides of the church and we were singing Silent Night. Okay. Before we did this, my candle was lighting just fine. But then when it came to walk down and have my beautiful candle moment, candle went out. And so I was walking down singing Silent Night while everybody else had their cute little candle in front of them. And I was holding this dead candle, which was not magical at all, let me tell you. But anyways, so my candle wasn't working. I'd set it down. And I said to myself, I said, Corinne, you know, if Bridget is here, my stinky candle, which is not lighting for anything, is going to be lit. And I looked down and my candle's lit.
Shut up.
Yeah. And so I turned to my friend Elaine and I was like, oh my God, I just thought I saw a Bridget. And then I said, my candle, which wasn't lighting before, I said, if she's here, it's going to be lit. And I looked down and it's lit. And she looks down and it's lit. And she's like, oh my gosh. And then we're looking at the candle. The candle's just lit. I'm occasionally looking down at it. It's still lit. And then Elaine's sister glances over, sees the candle that's lit on the ground. Electric candle. Nothing's going to go on fire. And she says, your candle's on. And she turns it off.
What?
And me and Elaine whip our heads towards her and we're like, you killed Bridget.
Why the fuck did she turn it off?
Because it shouldn't have been on.
Oh, well, that wasn't your fault. It was Bridget's.
I know, it was Bridget's fault. So yeah. So my sister appeared to me last Christmas, and who knows what's going to happen this Christmas, but the Christmas service is really magical, really Christmassy, and all the candles, and there's beautiful Christmas music, and it's just like a wonderful moment in time, and so I'm very excited about that. I got an Airbnb for my parents. They're spending the night over there, and then in the morning, coming over, having breakfast, and working on the puzzle some more, and who knows, my dad may clean the kitchen floor or something.
Wow.
I know, because last Christmas, we were working on the puzzle and we're like, hey, Dad, are you going to join us? And he's like, no, I'm having fun, as he's on his hands and knees cleaning the the kitchen floor. So
your dad knows how to have a good time.
I know he certainly does.
Bridget, if you're listening, I appreciate your appearance in church last year. And if you want to do it again this year, that's absolutely fine. Please don't appear in the apartment, you know, without any like prior notice, because I'll freak the fuck out.
I don't know. She might want to spoon with you in
the bed.
No,
that's not okay. Yeah. That's not okay. It's not okay. No. No spooning. No, thank you.
And that previously was her bed, so you
I know. Yeah, thanks. Got all of Bridget's leftovers here, and she knows it, and she's probably mad. Fabulous.
She is not mad. She's so happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She just wants you to be doing well and feeling loved.
I won't if she spoons me. That's not going to make me feel loved. I'm just saying.
Well, fear not. My sister would never be the type to spoon.
Yeah, in life. You never know how she is in the afterlife. She might be like, I was missing out. I need to make up, get some spooning action in because I didn't have enough of it, you know, in the living world.
Uh-huh. Sure. She's coming for you with the spoons.
That's it. I'm moving out. I'm moving out now. I'm going to go live with my sister in Fresno.
No, you have to stay. I'm having so much fun with
you. I'm never going to come back. I'm just going to be gone for Christmas. And you're like, hey, it's February 17th. When were you planning on coming back?
I'd be sad. But if you wanted to live with her, that I would be okay with that. Our relationship is more important than you living in my living room. But I do like you here, so.
Thanks. I am a fixture in your life. A living room fixture in your life.
I appreciate that.
Yay! Gentle listeners, if you're listening to this episode first, I've gone through a breakup. And it's not that I decided to up and move into Corinne's living room on a whim. No, no. There was a whole lot going behind it. Just saying, in case you missed all those episodes where I was very upset and sad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've just been showing Tam the wonders of living here and how amazing it is and how she'll want to stay here forever. It's fine. No pressure.
Sure. Okay.
Now that we've established that. Uh-huh. Did you tippy type a tantalizing to synopsis?
I did. Us? I sure did. And a triumphant one at that.
Ooh.
As you so requested in the outline. Here is my episode 5 and 6 synopsis.
Ooh.
Dash makes Mochi and Lily makes a rude-looking Muppet, all as part of their notebook dares to get each other out of their comfort zones. And while Dash finds his quiet zen in his cooking skills, Lily refuses to not see the best in things. A.K.A. she would not destroy her Muppet creation. The two are starting to fall for each other until some love interests from their past intervene.
Ooh.
Lily runs into Edgar, or E as she called him in a previous episode, at a dog park where he admits he was lightly stalking her.
Yay.
And also
Lightly stalking.
And was always a little jealous that she could be herself. He asks her out to a poetry slam because he's so deep and interesting.
Yes, he is.
Actually, he's not.
No.
Which is why he's trying to hitch his unoriginal wagon to Lily's star.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Dash's ex is strategically trying to maneuver herself out of the friend zone. She accompanies Dash to one of his notebook tasks and cautions him not to put Lily on a pedestal. Talking shit. Then, right before Lily's date with Edgar, she learns the upsetting news that her parents aren't enjoying a second honeymoon.
What?
Her dad is interviewing for a job in Fiji, and the family might potentially move there. Lily is pissed for like the first time ever and goes to the poetry slam in a huff.
In a huff.
After demolishing a few snowmen on the way, her newfound rage at the unfairness of it all takes her onto the poetry stage where she directs her rage at Edgar, who apologizes. It was actually kind of sweet. Like one of the moments where I was endeared towards Edgar.
One of the very few moments.
Yeah. He apologized and asked her out to a party the next night. The same party that Dash and Sophia are attending.
The ex, Sophia?
Yep. Dash and Lily meet at said party without knowing who the other is. Their conversation is easy and they get along well, but Sophia and Edgar must feel the chemistry because they pull them away from each other. And the night ends with Lily getting embarrassed after a game of truth or dare and leaving before almost getting kissed by Edgar because the Uber surge prices are too high.
Mm.
While Sophia steals Dash away from the party and takes him to his favorite museum because she procured keys that will allow them after-hours access. And Dash and Sophia's night ends with passionate kisses that lead to the chaise of seduction. And that's where we leave off. Lily refuses to get angry and destroy her Muppet creation, which was part of the task because she always likes to see the positive in things. Anyways, now that I've caught us up, Corinne.
Yes.
You want to start us off on this special episode 7 of Dash and Lily Christmas?
I am so excited because I love Christmas. Jingle, 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 jingle. Also, that was an amazing synopsis. Thank you.
Was not.
But it was very thorough.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just like I love Christmas, so does Lily. And it's Christmas morning. Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies plays as Lily bounds out of bed, exclaiming, "It's Christmas morning!" She is in a green hooded onesie with illustrated Christmas lights all over it. She is ready for Christmas! She writes to Dash, "Every year I wake up to my entire family wearing matching pajamas in front of a tree full of presents. We see Lily's brother, Grandpa, Mom, and Dad all wearing plaid pajamas. They have big smiles on their faces and are standing in front of a beautiful Christmas tree. Lily's face turns from a giant, delighted smile to a look of intense sadness. The camera pans back to the tree, which no longer has her smiling family in front of it. Instead, the room is devoid of people and the lights on the Christmas tree aren't even on. Lily walks briskly towards the tree as she narrates to the notebook boy, "At least this year, I have your name to look forward to." She searches under the tree, but the notebook isn't there, and therefore there is no name. The one Christmas gift she wanted. Thank you very much.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Lily's Christmas is full of disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
And the disappointments continue as she decides to go to Miss Basil E's to see if her aunt has the notebook. As she walks down the street, we see her attire is more eclectic than usual. She is wearing one red boot and one Converse.
red Converse, though.
Oh, okay. Well,
matching.
I wouldn't call it matching.
Kind of in a Punky Brewster way,
I guess. When she gets to her great aunt's house, Miss Basil E doesn't have anything for her and says, "I haven't seen him since he brought the boot over. Speaking of which, I see you're wearing its mate." Lily happily says, "I figure he'll know exactly who I am if I'm wearing it." Miss Basil E nods noncommittally and asks, "Have you considered what to do if he ends up not being the person in your head?"
Ooh.
Lily pish-poshes this. "You've met him and you liked him. It'll be fine." Her aunt responds, "Sure, his persnicketiness is charming, but it doesn't matter if I like him. It only matters if you do. And that remains to be seen." It does seem like everybody's kind of like, are you sure you're going to like this person when you meet him? Because they're so different, maybe.
But that's the way, like, that's, you know, when you are dating somebody, like, via passing notebook back and forth or texting, if you haven't met them, you have this false kind of intimacy and you don't actually get a good idea of like who they really are. And so you form this attachment to this person who writes well, and then you meet them in real life and it's like they go from somebody who's like reflective and deep and thoughtful to, "Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I really like to have fun. Let's go." You know? And you're like, whoa, that did not read in the text you were sending me.
It gives you the ick.
Yeah.
Just like the next series we're going to do.
Oh.
Nobody wants this.
Oh, okay.
Where they got the ick. Oh, just wait. You're going to find out what the ick is. Just then, Lily's phone starts blowing up with texts from her caroling group. They want Lily to meet them at McSorley's. Lily shares this with her aunt, and her aunt gets a faraway look in her eyes as she reminisces. "Ah, I went there with Estelle Getty and the cast of Hair. They didn't allow women in there at the time, but they made an exception when me and Estelle jumped onto the bar, hiked up our skirts, and..." She trails off and then interrupts her reverie.
And Estelle Getty is?
That is Sophia from The Golden Girls.
Yes! And
what the fuck? Like, okay, when they were younger, what was it, like the 60s or 70s? She's acting like it was the 20s or 30s. Like, women weren't allowed in McSorley's, a bar.
Okay. Women couldn't have, like, their own checking accounts in the 60s or their or credit cards. So, you know.
I knew they couldn't have their own credit cards and checking accounts, but that doesn't mean they can't drink. Your money's probably as good as guys' money.
Yeah, but there are still lots of menfolk places that women weren't allowed.
You should go to McSorley's. Hang out with your friends, Lily says with a trace of worry in her voice. But what if the notebook comes? Miss Basil E says cheerily. Then I'll dash it on over. No pun intended.
Oh.
Lily, who'd been heading towards the door, stops in her tracks and turns towards her aunt, asking, what pun? Her aunt tries to play it off. I said, have fun, dear, as Lily heads out the door.
Ooh, she dropped a clue. By the way, McSorley's was one of the last of the men-only pubs admitting women only after legally being forced to do so in 1970.
Figures.
Oh, McSorley's, you fucking assholes. Once Lily is outside, she ruminates on what her aunt said. What? Would dash be a pun? And then his words echo in her ears. My name is a connector of words. And suddenly her brain hamster has connected all the red string on the murder board, and she realizes not only what his name is, but also that she motherfucking met him. As she stands outside in a park marinating on this information, she decides to call Boomer. He is puzzled to be receiving a call from her, as he hasn't given her her number. Hey, Lily, nice to see you, but how'd you get my number? Lily nonchalantly says, oh, I called Two Boots and I told them I was your girlfriend and that I was in the army and that I wanted to surprise you for Christmas. Now, we don't know why Boomer wouldn't have given his fictitious army girlfriend his phone number, but the important thing is that the Two Boots employee bought the lie and gave Lily his phone number. Boomer is shocked. That worked? He, too, thinks it's incredulous. Lily sighs, yes, and I'm calling because it's an emergency. It's about your friend, Dash. A look of surprise flashes across Boomer's face. He told you his name? Lily kind of makes a, not really, expression. And Boomer sighs, no, I just told you his name. Lily asks, okay, so was Dash at a party for a girl named Priya? Boomer protests, this isn't fair. I can't tell you. It's against the rules of the game. Lily pushes, because if he was, he left the party with his ex. Boomer is shooketh. He what? Lily sadly says, please tell me I'm wrong. And Boomer sadly replies, you're not wrong. I'm sorry, Lily. And she hangs up on him without a goodbye.
I love it how Boomer's all like, I can't break the rules, even though we totally like looked up the mommy app for Dash and met with Lily when they weren't supposed to meet and then didn't tell Dash that they met.
Those were exceptions for love, okay?
Uh-huh. And this isn't an exception. I mean, it's maybe not an exception for love, but at least, like, you know, he could tell Lily, like, don't get your heart broken, girl. That's also kind of love.
You're like, don't get into a relationship. It's not worth it. You're just going to get heartbroken.
Yeah. Well, especially if he's going out with his ex-girlfriend. Hello. Hello. They were the shades of seduction happened the last episode. I'm not pulling this out my ass. And what does one do when they've just had really bad news? Some people take a moment to do a breathing exercise, journal out their feelings, listen to a guided meditation, talk to a trusted confidant. Was that the route Lily chose?
Was it?
No. She rushed over to McSorley's, announcing to her caroling group, Notebook Boy has a boyfriend. That would be a twist.
Yeah.
Notebook Boy has a girlfriend, and he's been keeping it from me. And then trying all of her friends' drinks until she finds the Goldilocks best drink of them all. And no brandy from the podcast Let's Go to Court. It's not Fireball. It's Peppermint Schnapps. Because, as Lily puts it, it tastes like a candy cane.
See, candy canes are the best.
Not when they're coming back up, girly. Stay away from the peppermint schnapps. Lily slams the drink down and says, Barkeep, may I have another? And another? Flash forward to several drinks later and the sloshed Lily holding court amidst her friends. He was so perfect and so cute. And we connected, like, really clicked. But then he left with her. And she's perfect. and he's perfect. And I've never been kissed, and I don't care if you know that. And there was this guy who acted like he was going to kiss me, and then he didn't.
Ugh.
One of her friends says, you should text him and tell him how you feel. And Corinna's like, are you really her friend? Drunk texting is generally a bad idea. But Lily.
Do you disagree?
No. I also don't know how she's getting so many alcoholic beverages in that bar. That's another thing. I'm like, you're in an establishment, one that apparently barred women, and they're giving you drinks. How old are you, honey?
But she's with a bunch of older people, so she can kind of...
Oh my God, if you knew how hard it was for me to fucking get alcohol in my teens, you would also be shooketh.
I could have easily gotten alcohol in my teens. Adults were offering it to me.
Anyways.
Says the non-drinker as Tam rolls her eyes at me. Wasted. It was wasted on me.
But Lily, in a drunken state, thinks this is a great idea, whips out her phone and texts, I wanted you to kiss me. I'm at McSorley's. And what happens when somebody received that text? You'll find out after this break.
No!
And we're back. They didn't show up and she made out with their phone screen.
Mm.
No, that's not what happened.
Dude, if you do it selfie mode, then when you kiss it, it's like you're kissing somebody else because your lips are meeting another pair of lips.
I just realized how little I clean my phone screen and how that really sounds disgusting. And I should probably remedy that soon.
Because you're going to make out with your phone?
No. Just because I realize how close it is to my mouth when I talk to people. And I'm like, my phone's kind of gross. It's fallen all over the place. And I haven't cleaned it adequately since it has. Anyways, Lily telling all my dark, dirty secrets here on this podcast. Yay. Lily's in the process of getting another drink when a vision appears before her. It's Dash. He smiles warmly at her and she asks, super confused, how'd you get here? He flirtatiously replies, you texted me, you weirdo. Her brain hamster would be working the wheel, but it is drunk too. So it's just rocking back and forth on the wheel, kind of passed out and sort of getting a little nauseous from the back and forth motion. She says, but I don't have your number. Then her vision clears and she realizes it's not Dash, it's Edgar.
Ooh.
He holds up his phone, showing her the text and smiling. So you wanted me to kiss you? No, fucker, because you wouldn't pay for her Uber, you cheap ass.
Seriously.
Oh, sorry. Injecting my commentary.
I fully agree with that commentary. I'm like, Edgar's the one you really want to kiss? Okay.
Ugh.
We cut to them drinking together at the bar, and hopefully Lily has something non-alcoholic in her glass like a Shirley Temple, but I have no way of knowing. She is talking a bit more clearly. I'm not talking a bit more clear. I can't say the word clearly.
Clearly.
That one is a hard word. It's okay.
Oh, my gosh. So she is talking a bit more clearly. So that's good. She asks, so why didn't you kiss me? Edgar replies, well, I wanted to, but then you said you'd never been kissed. And it was just so much pressure. You found out she'd never been kissed before you made the kiss tractor beam at her. Just saying is all, Edgar.
You know what that means?
It
means he's a bad kisser and he knows it.
Mm.
He didn't want to be her first because he's like, oh, girl, you want me to slobber over half of your face? Do you want the front of your shirt to get juicy?
It's either that or he's like, if I kiss her, she's going to be so in love with me because of me kissing her and she'll want to marry me and I won't be able to get rid of that stage 5 clinger.
I don't think he's that deep or shallow or deep and shallow. No, I don't think Edgar has the depths that come behind that thought process. No,
I think that's a pretty shallow thought if you ask me, but doesn't matter. Edgar has his story and he's sticking to it. And I say this to Edgar. You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. But Edgar, who sees a kissing opportunity, has since forgotten about all the pressure and trepidations and pulls a piece of Hallmark mistletoe out of his pocket and holds it up between them. Lily asks, what's that? He proudly says, "Mistletoe. I stole it from outside." Lily corrects, "Actually, it's holly, but because of big Christmas movie conglomerates like Hallmark," her educational remarks are interrupted by Edgar moving in for a smoocheroo. And it's actually a pretty sweet one until Lily hears a voice calling her name. She turns, and at the front door of the bar is Dash. The real Dash, not the Mirage. He has her boot in one hand and the red book in another. He approaches Lily, and I was so wrong about her sobering up a bit. She looks at him blearily, confused, and thinking perhaps once again she's hallucinating. She looks like she's about to say something when...
there's a record scratch, and we... rewind back to Christmas Eve, and Dash and Sophia in the Morgan Library together on the chaise of seduction.
Ooh.
They kiss, and he pulls away. Sophia asks, "What's wrong?" And Dash says, "I don't feel good about this. I'm kissing you, and I'm thinking about her."
Mm.
Sophia rests her chin on his shoulder and looks up at him with puppy dog eyes and says softly, "You're a disappointment as a time travel companion." And then pulls away. Dash smiles good-naturedly and answers, "I don't want to start this again, and I don't think you want to either." She smiles at him and says, "You wouldn't understand because you've always lived in one place, but because of my dad's job, we're moving every year and I'm always having to get used to something new. So when I came back here, you were comfortable and familiar." Hot, am I right?
Yeah.
I just want that hot familiarity.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing like when I go out on a date with a guy and he's like, "Oh, no, you're not hot. You're not sexy. I'm not very attracted to you. But you know what? You feel very comfortable and familiar.
Like a pair of old slippers."
Mm.
Dash chuckles. "Huh, kind of like that pea coat you had me throw away." Sophia thinks a moment and says, "You've changed. You've changed for her." Dash suggests, "We should probably get home." And Sophia offers, "Or... how many times do you get to spend the night at the Morgan Library?
Mm.
Let's stay here as friends." And so Dash does. And it's all very platonic, with Dash sleeping on the floor and Sophia sleeping on the chaise lounge, which is not a chaise of seduction anymore. And everything is great until Sophia gets woken up by her ringing phone. It's her mom, and Sophia is apologizing in rapid-fire Spanish. "I'm sorry, I didn't know how late it was, and I'm heading home now." The duo gets up, and Dash realizes, and thank you, Corinne, for not putting that in Espanol and making me try to sound it out. Dash realizes that he has not taken care of the red notebook. It's not under the tree with his name on it, as promised. He exclaims, "Oh no, the notebook! Oh, I forgot to drop it off for Lily." Sophia chides, "You should give her more than a notebook." Dash responds dismissively, "I don't even know where she lives." Sophia responds, "The city is not that big." "Really though, Sophia? I'm pretty sure New York is fairly large as cities go, but who am I? I've only been there once."
He also knows where Mrs. Basil E. is, so he has a direct connection to her.
Uh-huh. Sophia doesn't know that, though. She probably just thinks he can just wander the streets screaming her name and she'll eventually hear him. Once Dash is outside on his own, he looks at his phone and there's a notification from the Manhattan Mommies app.
Ooh.
Dash is puzzled. "Why do I have a mommy app on my phone?" And then realizes, the boot! He opens up the app and reads a message from East Village Eve. It says, "Was someone looking for a boot?" And attached to the message is a picture of Lily's feet with one red boot and one red Converse Chuck high top sneaker with the title, "Spotted at McSorley's."
As Dash jogs over to McSorley's, he passes a movie theater that is showing the much talked about Collation. He quickly backtracks and heads inside to buy two tickets for the 8 p.m. show. The guy behind the counter raves, "It's amazing. I've never cried harder, and I've seen The Notebook 20 times. Dash is suddenly concerned. Is it sad? He smiles at Dash. Tears of joy. Dash is thrilled. Great. And hands him his money and then shares, "I'm taking this girl who I've never met, but we've been writing each other in this notebook. And I didn't know how to find her, but this morning I got this message on a mommy app. And look, it's her." He holds up the picture of the Lily from the shins down. Because you don't see her, you just see her feet.
Thanks, mommy app.
Thanks, mommy app. The guy nicely says, "Uh-huh." And the man behind Ash in line demands, "Come on. I just want to buy my movie tickets." and Dash, glowing, effuses. Sir, it's a Christmas miracle. This is Christmas magic. And grabs his tickets, yelling over his shoulder, Merry Christmas, you beautiful, angry New Yorker, and jogs off.
I wonder if Dash cut in line in front of him.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah. With this movie, I don't doubt it. Dash continues on to McSorley's and sees Lily and fucking Edgar. He approaches Lily and says, You're the girl from the party. And she responds blearily, You're Dash, a connector of words. They pause a beat, staring at each other, and then Dash asks in a disgusted voice, Are you with him? How long has this been going on? And Lily spits back, None of your fucking business, bro. Okay, she doesn't say that. I said it for her.
Good, good. I appreciate that, Tam.
I know. I'm like, are we together? Do we have a commitment going on that I don't know about? Did you rip out a page that stated something about that?
Uh-huh.
No. No.
No.
Back off, bro.
Yeah, and who was hanging out with their ex? That was you.
And Lily spits back, Oh, yeah? Like, you didn't go kiss Sophia. Edgar, not reading the room, cheerily asks, Hey, do you two know each other? And Dash, caught up in the curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal of it all, bitterly replies, I thought I did.
Oh!
Again, fucker. I mean, come
yeah,
on now.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Lily starts turning a lily green. I like that. And wobbly, looking at Dash, now concerned, asks, Are you okay? Have you been drinking? Lily replies, So much. And Dash offers, Okay, let me take you home. But she protests, I can't go home like this. Edgar jumps in, Don't worry about it, Dash. I'll take her home.
Ooh.
But Dash is not standing for that. Nope.
Mm-mm.
He knows exactly where to take her.
Yeah, and he doesn't want Edgar being like, Hey, maybe I can get some more smoocheroos out of this situation.
Yeah, because he was the one that was trying to initiate strip poker the night before when they were at the party. So,
yeah.
Anyways, Lily staggers off to gather her coat, and when she returns, Dash escorts her out of McSorley's, and Edgar immediately hits on one of Lily's caroler friends who has come up to the bar to order a drink. That man. He's a keeper.
Such a keeper.
A keeper in the bar all by himself, alone and single.
And the caroler chick was like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
She was significantly older than him, too.
Yeah.
She was like, I don't date babies. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. But if you're like...
Well, dating babies is wrong.
Well, but... dating babies. I'm just saying, dating younger men is fine.
Yes.
But with the age discrepancy is way more pronounced the younger you are.
Absolutely. And also, he is underage, which...
And still drinking at a bar. Damn.
Yes. Once Lily and Dash are in the cab, they are sitting as far apart as possible from each other in the back seat. Dash exclaims with disdain... Disdain. Ah! Why?
Words are hard.
Words are so hard. And I said things easier when I was on the phone with you. I don't know why. I don't know why. Dash exclaims with disdain. Tebow? Really? Of all people, why him? Lily, who is so over everything and feeling terrible, flatly responds, He's easy to be with and fun. Dash bitterly states, Oh, so not depressing like me.
How about not possessive like you, Dash?
How about like not making everything about you when it's not, Dash? Lily bites back, saying, I don't know anything about you except, Oh, wait, you lied. And you spent the night with a girl who is obnoxiously perfect. Yeah, I know. And you're wearing the same clothes you wore to the party last night. Dash angrily clarifies, Sophia and I broke up a year ago. The only thing that happened last night was me doubling down on that fact with her. Mm-hmm. And you kissing her. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Lily says, Why didn't you tell me you were seeing her in the notebook? She gives a resigned shrug and states, I'm not with Edgar either, for your information. It was just a kiss. It didn't mean anything to me. Dash is all riled up and retorts, Oh, so you're just kissing all kinds of meaningless guys. Like...
She kissed a guy.
She kissed a guy. You were so fucking bent out of shape when you kissed somebody last night. So fuck right off.
I can pronounce this word hypocrite.
You pronounced it flawlessly, Tim. Thank you.
It just came out so easily because he is one, a big one.
Seriously. I mean, I understand him emotionally being upset because Tebow is understandably his nemesis, but that having been said, he has no room to talk.
No. And he's doubling down. Mm-hmm. Like, bro, you saw that happen and you know that it's you. Never mind.
His self-righteous outrage is out of control. Self-righteous outrage is outrageous.
Now it makes me think that she really should have wound up with Boomer. Lillian Boomer. Poor Vita.
Right, because you ever stopped thinking that before?
No, I'm just saying, like, now it's like just solidifying my opinion here in this little section that you just read. And you're not even done yet. I think it's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah. I'll just go ahead and let you continue.
Because this episode is a bummer, just FYI.
I know. I'm so sad that you got this one. I'm smiling as I say that. And I got the next one. Yeah.
Lily finally sounds indignant. As Tam and I are very indignant on her behalf. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. It was my first kiss and I wanted it to be with you, but you weren't there. You told me that the notebook would be under the tree, but it wasn't. And Corinne, that's me, would like to add, that was because you were clarifying things with Sophia. Oh, Mr. Indignant Pants. Clarifying. You know what clarifying means to Dash, apparently? Mm-mm. Kissing. Mm. Yes. Dash is defensive.
Again? Oh, shocking.
Look, he is a rich white guy.
Oh, then he has a lot to be defensive about. Yes, that's true. Yes. That's a fair point. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. They're victims, you know, Tam. Mm. The world is harder for them.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's now more than ever.
Yes. Dash is defensive. Well, I'm sorry I was late. Do you have that little faith in me? Oh, yeah, with the person we haven't met? Yeah, sure. So much trust has been cultivated or whatever during this period of time. Cultivated, thank you, Corinne, during this period of time. Lily pushes back. You're so judgy. You have no idea what I'm going through. And Dash is confused. Wasn't that the point of the notebook? To share that? Lily replies, well, I guess we both kept secrets from each other. I hate that notebook. Wasn't even my idea. My brother thought of it and wrote the first clues at the Strand. Man, we should have made this into a fucking ODK theater. I was not thinking, obviously. It would have been perfect. She pauses for a moment and then says sadly, you're nothing like Boomer. I'm going to run off with him. No, she says, you're nothing like Boomer said. He said you'd be nicer. Dash, who is all full of, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal, doubles down on that feeling and asks, you know Boomer?
Of course not, because Boomer doesn't break the rules of their notebook exchange. Not at all. Not Boomer, no. Solid. 100%. Follows through all the time.
Boomer knows when to break the rules. And when to not break the rules. Boomer understands these things.
He exercises good judgment, like when he ran out of his job to go deliver the notebook to Dash so he could go see the toy soldier or the Nutcracker house.
I think this movie has to be based on a book that was made before cell phones were around. And they just like wrote cell phones into it because he could have just taken a picture of the book and sent it to to fucking Dash.
Yeah.
But Boomer is also a teenager, so he does not always make good decisions. Shit, I'm 48 and I still don't always make good decisions. So when Dash asks, you know Boomer, she glances over at him, doesn't say anything, basically sighs with her eyes and leans her head against the window, just wanting it all to be over. Her dream guy has spent the last several minutes yelling at her. That's not hot. Not exactly the romantic meeting she was hoping for. Dash pulls out the red notebook and writes while Lily tries to keep from throwing up in the cab. A noble pursuit. I have had a moment of trying to keep from throwing up in the cab, and it was not fun.
When were you about to throw up in a cab?
There was this one time when it was one of the times when I didn't have a car, which isn't like a super big deal with where I live. However, I was really sick. I had a yeast infection, a urinary tract infection, and the stomach flu.
Oh, God.
All at once. And I didn't know if I was going to die or not. Every time I ate something, I would get really cold and my body would shake. It was a lot of fun. So anyways, I decide to go to the doctor, but I was just like, I cannot take the bus to the doctor. Like, for one, I would need a walk. And my urinary tract infection was so bad that it was like difficult for me to walk. I would have needed to walk from the apartment all the way down to Telegraph Avenue to get to the bus stop. It was a long walk. So I was like, you know what, Corinne, you're going to take a fucking cab. And I did. And the entire time I was just like, please, sweet baby Jeebus, do not throw up in the cab.
How did you get home? Did you also take a cab home?
I actually took the bus home.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And
after you got pain meds, I'm assuming some drug ass.
Well, this was before I was part of Kaiser, which that would have been really nice because then I could have just gone and gotten the drug ass right away. But instead, I had to like get off the bus an extra block early and wait at the Walgreens forever. And Walgreens is the worst place to get medications from. Well, you know, Walgreens forever while they filled my medication. And then I staggered home.
Hmm.
Yeah. Good times.
Memories. I can't think of any time I almost puked in a cab. Sorry, I can't contribute to that story.
Have you ever been drank enough where you close to pound town? Not as in sexy times, but as in pounding it out onto the pavement?
Not that I can remember, no.
Wow.
Yeah. If I had a designated driver or a responsible person, that might have happened more often, but it did not. Eventually, Dash and Lily arrive at Miss Basil E's, and after directing Lily to the couch, she says to Dash, "Thank you so much for bringing Lily home. This is highly uncharacteristic of her, I promise." Dash glumly says, "That's all right," and hands her the red notebook and red boot to Lily's aunt, who is wearing a glittery silver robe over her turquoise blouse and skirt. Oh, Auntie. Auntie can see that he is done and tries persuading him, "This doesn't have to be goodbye. I'm sure when she sobers up..." Dash interrupts, shaking his head. "No, no. I'm gonna go. It's better if we just leave it in the notebook." He starts to walk away and she tries one more time, calling after him, "You don't want to give up. Just when the game's gotten interesting..." He turns and looks at her saying, "Well, I guess I don't want to play games anymore." And walks off.
Ooh.
Miss Basil E. turns her attention towards Lily, who's laying on the couch feeling pukey, and asks, "And what have we learned?" Lily responds, "Taking too many sips of people's drinks leads to headaches, heartaches, and I shouldn't mix my drinks." Just then the doorbell rings and Auntie gets up, heads towards it, stating, "That must be your grandfather." Suddenly, Lily's filled with panic. "What? Oh, no, no, no. Don't tell him I'm here. He can't see me like this." Miss Basil E. apologizes. "I'm sorry, but this one you're going to need to deal with on your own." Grandpa walks into his sister's front room and immediately states, "You've been drinking." Lily very carefully shakes her head. "No." And Grandpa shuts the shit down. "I can smell it as soon as I walk through that door." So Lily quickly changes tactics, waving her hand towards her grandpa and drunkenly asking, "Have you ever tried peppermint schnapps? You should. It would help you relax." She smiles hopefully up at her grandpa, and Miss Basil E. says sternly, "Lily, don't dig any deeper. Show's over." And Grandpa responds to his sister, "I don't need your help." She retorts, "Don't overreact. She made a mistake." As Grandpa gets Lily up from the couch and hustles her out the door while shooting daggers with his eyes at his sister.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. As Grandpa and Lily are climbing the stairs.
I believe you wrote claiming the stairs. They were claiming the stairs.
I'm surprised that Lily didn't claim the stairs with her puke. Up to their apartment, Grandpa reprimands, "You lied about drinking and about going to your aunt's. I can't keep up with your lies." Does Grandpa prepare her for what lies on the other side of their apartment door? Lies. Ha ha! No, he does not, because he's pissed. So when he opens the door and Lily walks through it, and 17 people yell, "Surprise!" at Lily, she stands there for a moment trying to process, and then, very puzzled and also still very drunk, she asks, "Mom? Dad?" Lily's parents say, "Merry Christmas! We came back early!" Lily just stares and then throws up into her boot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised it wasn't more projectile-y than it was, honestly.
I don't think she ate anything. It's just trickle because her stomach was empty. Oh. That was a cinematic moment. Lily puking into her boot. Oh. And the next section's called Curse Your Sudden But Inevitable Betrayal Boomer. Dash, who is not fit for company because he's in such a bad mood, goes over to Boomer's house. When Boomer answers the door, Dash glumly hands Boomer a gift, and Boomer excitedly asks, "Are these the robots I wanted?"
Aww.
Dash responds, "You didn't tell me you met Lily." Boomer's face falls. "I was just trying to..." But Dash cuts him off. "What else are you lying to me about?" Ooh. Boomer's confused. "I wanted to help. You know I care about you and I'm always looking out for you. Why don't you come inside?" He opens the door further and we could see his family festively gathered around a fireplace. Boomer entices. There's eggnog and a weird-looking roast in the oven. Dash heads towards the building's door. "I'd probably get salmonella and I could look out for myself." Oof. And he leaves his bestie Boomer with the gift of anxiety and what the fuck as he walks out onto the cold Christmas night.
Ooh. Ho, 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 ho. Seriously, Dash. Ugh, I'd probably get salmonella. Bye, asshole. Mm. He is not winning any points from me right now.
I'd gladly get salmonella for you, Boomer. Seriously. I'd do it for you.
Well, I wouldn't. I would just not drink the eggnog, but I'd still enjoy hanging out with Boomer. Back at Lily's apartment, she's laying on her bed, questioning her life choices, and possibly feeling like she's spinning. Her parents come in with her pair of matching Christmas jammies. Mom says, "Are you trying to break our hearts?" What the fuck? And Dad says, "We moved heaven and earth to get here on Christmas for you. It was Langston's idea." Lily sits up and doesn't address either of her parents' ridiculous guilt trips. They're trying to say, "We love you and we're concerned about you," but it is totally coming out wrong. Lily asks, "Why didn't you tell me about Fiji?" They say, "We didn't want to ruin Christmas for you." That's Corinne laughing. That's me. Yes. And I say, "Yeah, it's so much better to have you inform me a few days before Christmas that you're not going to be there. Totally great."
And to add that you're going to a really tropical, cool destination that I would probably want to go to had I been asked, but I was not.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't feel abandoned at all if my parents were like a few days before Christmas, "Oh, by the way, we're going to Fiji."
Mm-hmm.
I totally would feel abandoned. I'd be like, "What the fuck?"
I know. I remember one time before my parents got divorced, so I was very young. My dad went to Hawaii with his friends and left me and my sister with our mom. And I was like, fuck you. I want to go to Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, there was some questionable shit going on there. I don't know what he was doing, but I'm like,
uh-huh.
Now in hindsight, I'm like, yep, if you were alive, Dad, I would punch you in the thigh and demand answers.
I'm sure your mom was thrilled to be left with the kids while he went off to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like if my parents were like, you know, a month or two beforehand, "Hey, we're going to Hawaii for Christmas," I'd be like, "Okay, that's fine." But like a few days before Christmas, fuck right off.
Mm. Would your parents do that? Like, realistically, in this, like, your actual parents, do you think they would go to Hawaii for Christmas?
No, I don't think that they would. I think that they would be more concerned about having family Christmas together. But you know, if they did, that would be okay. But I wouldn't be okay with it if they were just, like, a week beforehand. "Oh, BT dubs, we're leaving for, like, Fiji or Hawaii." And I'd be like, "Wait, what?"
Which one of you is dying? Tell me now. Be straight with me.
And why am I not invited along, per Tam? Yes, exactly. Lily rebuts, "That's exactly what happened. My Christmas was ruined." Mom warns, "Well, there's more news." This whole conversation with her parents is not going down well with me at all. Dad finishes Mom's sentence saying, "I got the job in Fiji and they want me to start in a week." Lily protests, "Oh, in a week?" and screams into a pillow. I love that she screamed into the pillow. She's like, "Aah!" It was beautiful. Her mom encouraging her, "I know, honey, just let it out." Fuck off. Lily says, a week is too soon. We belong in Manhattan, and I'm not ready to completely upend my life with a new school, new home, and a new country in a week. Dad explains, I've been doing contract work for the past year, and it barely pays and doesn't have benefits. We're just scraping by. Mom says, we're living in Grandpa's apartment, and it's happening with or without your approval, but we hope with. Is that your approval?
No.
That's your disapproval?
Yes, exactly.
Lily is trying to take it all in, and Mom invites hopefully. Want to put on your PJs and join the party? Are her parents living on the same planet as everybody else?
I have some theories about her parents, and I will save them for the next episode because this behavior continues.
I'm just like, your daughter is obviously fucking drunk, and you're like, you're breaking our hearts. Why aren't you coming out to the Christmas party that we showed up for? Surprise, we did this for you. I'm like, fuck right off.
After we abandoned you for a trip to Fiji and then sprung on you that you're moving to a different country.
Yeah.
Surprise. Why aren't you happy? What's wrong? What's going on?
Aren't you thrilled to have your life completely upended in a week? Yeah. So Mom continues, you want to join the party? It's going to be the last big family gathering in a while because we're all fucking moving to Fiji. Jesus Christ. Her parents get up and head out the door. But before Mom leaves, she states, and tomorrow you're going to have a lot of explaining to do about what looks like a hangover and what smells like you being either drunk as a skunk or having taken a shower in a candy cane factory. And you are by far not sticky enough for option number two. I added that last part in because
I was like, I don't remember her mom saying that.
No, because that would have actually been funny instead of her just saying that you have a lot of explaining to do. And I'm just like, you know what? You abandon your 17-year-old daughter who hasn't done anything wrong up until this point in her life. And she shows up drunk one time and you're going to get all punitive with her? How about having a compassionate conversation? How about that?
And maybe your abandonment caused her drinking, huh?
I know. Is this an after-school special? No. Every once in a while, somebody experiments and they make mistakes, okay? I think that her hangover is going to be enough of a punishment. Thank you very much. Okay, big question. Do we think with everything that has happened, Lily's parents should give her a pass for her errant peppermint schnapps day or that there should be repercussions?
Definitely a pass.
Yeah.
Definitely. They are behaving badly as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm like an eye for an eye.
Seriously.
Ugh. This last section is called The Dear Letter John.
The Dear John Letter.
The Dear John Letter from Dash. Lily is bummed about the whole situation and not feeling great. She bends over, going into her bag, and finds the red notebook. She opens it and reads, while we see a montage. Dear Lily, we set ourselves up for this disappointment. I was never going to be the guy in your head. You were never going to be the girl in mine. We see Dash by himself at his dad's place and Lily's family all celebrating Christmas in matching pajamas while Lily looks miserable. Dash continues, the fantasy was never going to live up to the reality. There's no such thing as a Christmas miracle. It's not your fault. It's mine for believing. Thanks for playing the game with me. It was fun for a while, but the thing about playing a game is someone has to lose, and I guess we both lost this time. So I'm writing to say, game over.
Oof.
We see Dash watching the movie Collation all by his lonesome. He's sitting in a packed theater with the ghost of Lily's memory sitting in the one vacant seat next to him. Then Dash says, I don't think we should see each other again. It's better if we both move on. Goodbye, Lily. Merry Christmas.
Oof.
And the episode ends with us seeing Lily in the middle of the family photo, surrounded by 24 friends and family. And while everyone else smiles, she looks absolutely miserable. To be continued. The end for now. That was the most depressing episode to have on Christmas Eve.
Oh my gosh. I can't even with that. I can't even.
So many people on the naughty list.
Ugh.
So many people on the naughty list. Da, 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 da. I think it's safe to say this episode that Dash is on the motherfucking naughty list.
100%.
Motherfucking hypocrite.
You know
right
what?
On the naughty list.
He's a baby man. Mm-hmm. He's a baby man.
Yes, they're acting like it. Yes, oof. Indeed.
He's making fucking Edgar look mature.
Ouch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And making Boomer look more and more like a catch. Just saying.
When did he ever not look like a catch?
I'm saying more and more like a catch. He was already primo property in the beginning. And now it's just like, okay, now you're oceanfront with your own personal plunge pool and no HOA fees. It's getting better and better.
Oh my gosh. Shut your mouth with that dirty talk.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I think Boomer's on the naughty list. Her parents are on the naughty list. Grandpa's on the naughty list.
Yeah. Langston's still on the naughty list. He hasn't redeemed himself yet. He's still there. He is still there from the last episode, Langston.
Yeah. He still has a shadow hanging over his head, mm-hmm. which I've been keeping on saying, it's going to happen in the next episode. It's going to happen in the next. Still hasn't happened yet. It will happen in the final episode.
Edgar's on the naughty list because he waited till Lily was
drunk as a skunk
to plant a kiss on her.
Uh-huh.
And still on the naughty list from last episode when he wouldn't pay the Uber because of the surge charges.
Ugh,
fucker.
Fucker.
Yeah. Is anybody on the nice list?
Yeah. 100% on the nice list. Lily's on the nice list.
Miss Basil E.
Miss Basil E is definitely on the nice list.
Mm-hmm.
There, and Boomer. Boomer's on the nice list.
You said Boomer's on the naughty list.
No. Why would he be on the naughty list?
I don't know. You said he was on the naughty list. I was like, okay.
Nope. I did not mean to say that he was on the naughty list. Sometimes I say other people's names when they should be other people's names. And that would be an instance of that.
Might want to edit Boomer out then.
Oh, I will 100% edit Boomer out. Because
I thought for a second, I'm like, because he broke the rules.
No, I have no problem with him breaking the rules. You are the one that has problems with him breaking the rules.
I'm just saying he shouldn't be holding so fast to those rules because he broke them.
They're guidelines.
Uh-huh. This conversation is not going to see the light of day, so it doesn't matter.
You know what? You don't think it will? This exemplifies how we are. I'm like, it's a guideline. And you're like, it's rules.
And vice versa. Sometimes we feel opposite about things.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Miss Basil E, Boomer, Lily, Grandpa still on the shitty naughty list. I think that's pretty much everybody in this episode.
Yeah. I do feel like Langston gets some redemption because he tries to do a nice gesture for his sister getting his parents, why he would want those parents. But still, his parents to come home early to be there for Lily on Christmas because it would be important to her.
Edmalt, do his parents not advocate for themselves? Because I will get into it in the next. Because Langston put this together. We had nothing to do. We wanted to stay in Fiji. We didn't want to come home to you. If your brother didn't tell us that you were getting shit-faced drunk and depressed, we would have stayed there.
They act like it was such a burden to get back in time for Christmas. We did all of this stuff just to get back to you. You should be so grateful. And I'm like,
you know what else you did? You left. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did.
Dude pros. Like, seriously? Mm-mm. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. You have any final thoughts?
I think we covered everybody on the naughty and nice list.
All right. So, Miss Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
And the next episode we have is Dash and Lily, Episode 8, New Year's Eve.
A.K.A. The Final Frontier.
The final countdown. Be-be-be-be.
And if you have anything you'd like to say about the naughty nice list, about Lily's parents, peppermint schnapps, or anything else, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias on Instagram and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with One Dry Kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. Is it me you're looking for?
No, because you're sitting right next to me.
Oh.
No.
No.
Hold on, that's not a good no.